CBS News next on KIXI. It's now 10 o'clock.
CBS News. The Senate meets in rare secret session Wednesday to consider banning the secret dispatch of arms and money to Angola. I'm Jerry Lande, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. With the doors of their chamber barred to press and public, senators will meet to determine whether the new defense appropriation bill contains buried CIA funds for military aid to anti-Soviet forces in the Angola Civil War. Critics will try to tack on a rider restricting the use of those funds. That effort received a psychological boost Tuesday from a Senate subcommittee, which unanimously endorsed a similar measure sponsored by Senator Dick Clark of Iowa.
We said if the administration wants to recommend overt activity, open activity, that we'll be happy to consider it, but it cannot continue without specific authorization of the Congress. Most of us, I think, feel that we ought not to be in there either covertly or overtly, but certainly that's something that ought to be brought to the American people and to the Congress to vote on one way or another.
There's a related move to Clark's underway in the House to restrict military aid that reportedly flows through CIA channels to neighboring Zaire. That proposed amendment to the defense bill being urged by Representative Don Bonker of Washington.
The concern that we have is that money and supplies and equipment are all passing indirectly to Angola through Zaire. So the second part of our amendment is directed at prohibiting any further aid to Zaire if there's any indication that that aid will be passed on to the FNLA in Angola.
Bonker's measure would also restrict direct American military aid to Zaire. According to a Reuters dispatch, the CIA has provided President Mobutu Sese Seko of Zaire with large quantities of arms, mercenaries, and at one time even gave him bombers that had been earmarked for use in the unsuccessful Bay of Pigs invasion. More news in a minute.
Sound familiar? Each year, fire claims a devastating toll in human life and property. Last year, fire killed over 11,000 people and destroyed close to $4 billion in property. Underwriters Laboratories field engineer Ray McNabb says you can help prevent this terrible killer from striking you or the ones you love by following these simple precautions.
Check the condition of electrical cords, appliances, and receptacles. Make certain that electrical cords are not frayed or placed beneath carpeting. Always keep matches and lighters away from children. And store paints and other flammable liquids in sealed containers.
And know exactly where your fire extinguisher is located.
That's right. Keep a fire extinguisher in the kitchen, the garage, and where your heaters are located. And be sure it is accessible should the fire start in that area.
This is public safety information from Underwriters Laboratories and this station.
Wednesday, the House is expected to pass by simple majority vote and send on to the President a six-month extension of the anti-recessionary tax cuts enacted earlier this year. House leaders tried and failed to win swifter passage Tuesday by suspending the rules. That tactic required a two-thirds majority, and it failed by 22 votes, leading administration officials to predict Mr. Ford may have the votes he needs to uphold his promised veto. That drew this comment from Ways and Means Chairman Al Ullman.
If the president vetoes the bill and we fail to override, millions of Americans will have a major tax increase in January. I think there's no way to avert it. When we get back in after the first of the year, we will be facing up to that issue again, and we may be able to pass something at that time.
Says he's hopeful. Ullman says he's hopeful there'll be enough vote switching Wednesday to assure an override of the veto. The government estimates there have been at least 158 hazardous near collisions in the air involving commercial aircraft during the first 10 months of the year. Now this.
Hi, I'm Mike Roy.
Well, that'd make me Denny Bracken. I understand we're crumbling cookies on the crumbling cookie thing tomorrow.
Oh, huh? Sure, it is the season for the cookie thing to get us a wrap around the tonsil idea going.
Yes, uh-huh.
Everybody steals cookies.
Yes, I've seen your cookies.
I've never yet found a thief-proof cookie, but we'll talk about all kinds of cookies tomorrow.
Yes, and your cookies don't crumble, and I know why.
That's right. Because they're
soaked in stuff.
That's right, or the other ones are blonde and tall and...
Squeeze them and wring them out, right?
I like those cookies.
The cook thing tomorrow here on CBS.
This is Anita Bryant. Performing is a very exciting part of my life, and I also love coming home to a caring husband and four active, growing children. I count being a wife and mother as one of my most challenging opportunities. I'm glad to be a wife, and I feel good being a mother.
You are a worthwhile person. Cultivate your God-given talents as you choose your lifestyle. This affirmation of women shared by the Mennonite churches.
Bicentennial plans have moved a step nearer to completion thanks to a diligent team of Philadelphia gravediggers and a determined anthropologist from the University of Pennsylvania. After 2 days of intensive digging in Philadelphia's old Mount Moriah Cemetery, Dr. Alan Mann announces he's found the bones of seamstress Betsy Ross. It was she, legend has it, who sewed the first American flag of 13 stars at the request of George Washington. The remains of Betsy Ross to be reinterred in the courtyard next to the Ross home in time for America's 200th birthday. Says Dr. Mann, I'm glad we found her. I'm Jerry Landay, CBS News.
CBS for Seattle, this is KIXI. The weather outlook calls for extensive fog and low clouds through Thursday with chance of a few showers tomorrow night or Thursday. The highs in the mid-30s and lows in the lower 30s. And currently in downtown Seattle, a chilly 34 degrees, 33 at the airport. The barometer holds steady. It reads 30.43. Taking a look at sports in the National Basketball Association this evening, Houston beat Kansas City 111-100. The New York Knicks over Atlanta 97-96. Golden State dumped Chicago 91-87. And Washington beat Buffalo 100-94. In the ABA, the New York Nets down Kentucky 98-96, and St. Louis beat San Antonio 106-103. CBS Radio Mystery Theater next on KIXI at 7 past 10.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. A good name in man or woman, the great poet tells us, is the immediate jewel of their souls. True enough. And how valiantly, even desperately, all of us would fight to preserve and protect a good name. But would you also do battle to preserve or protect a bad name? Look at it this way. Suppose a bad name was the only name you had. Suppose it were a name that would make you rich and famous. What then? Would you give it up?
Having trouble?
Yeah. Thanks for stopping.
Well, what seems to be the trouble?
Well, I think it's the carburetor.
Well, let me take a look.
Don't bother.
Huh?
I'm onto the game. You're working with Jim Kuick, aren't you?
What are you talking about?
Don't move.
Mister, what are you pointing that gun at me for?
I'm just going to kill you before you kill me. Kubik monkeyed with the carburetor, so I'd have to stop along here.
Look, I figured you were in trouble, and I wanted to help.
Well, if you're religious, I'll give you a couple of seconds to pray.
You got it all wrong. You look like you were in trouble. I only want...
Our mystery drama, Hung Jury, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Sam Dan and stars Howard Da Silva. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
For a lot of people, a full-size car is a downright necessity. Buick understands that, which is why they build Le Sabre, a car with lots of standard comfort and convenience, a big trunk, and honest-to-goodness elbow room for six. Buick Le Sabre, free spirit in the family size.
That's how it's gonna be, your spirit's free.
Larry T. has just been released from prison. He wants to be given a new chance, but he needs our help. The God we worship expects us to work with Larry T. or anyone else who needs our time, our understanding. During our country's 200th birthday, join with others at your local church or synagogue and make plans and sacrifices to help relieve suffering. Welcome God to America's bicentennial. Practice what you pray. A message from Religion and American Life, the Ad Council, and the station.
Children make a lot of noise, but to me it's a wonderful sound. They have a lot of energy, a lot of playing to do before they take on the serious world of adulthood. Every day they take on a bit more of this wonderful world. I guess we're lucky, because there are so many places in the world where the children are too weak, even for play. Bangladesh, Honduras, right here at home. They're weak from the lack of protein and essential vitamins, weak from the bad water and the parasites that rob them of important nutrients. A childhood of tears instead of laughter. And even if they do manage to become adults, their minds and limbs will be stunted by chronic malnutrition. You can help a child to grow up strong and independent, maybe even be one of tomorrow's leaders. Send your contribution to Save the Children, Box 970, Grand Central Station, New York 10017. That's Save the Children, Box 970, Grand Central Station, New York 10017.
Exist in every country. Here they are referred to as Middle America. They are the hard-working, sober-minded, respectable members of the community, the guardians of its morality. And one of their vast number is the hero, or more properly, the protagonist of our play. His name is Henry Pollard. He's 40-ish, bald, a bit plumpish, and like the character in the classic popular song, you'd pass him on the street and never notice him. And the only reason you'll notice him now is because we shall take you into his house, a suburban split ranch, where we shall confront him in an after-dinner discussion with his wife.
Henry?
Yes?
I'm afraid I did something you might not approve of this afternoon.
Oh, there's not much danger of that. What was it?
I volunteered you again.
Did you? What for this time?
Oh, the books at the church are so confused.
And you said I would straighten them out.
They need someone who's an accountant.
I don't mind, Norma.
You don't?
Of course not.
Well, I do. Now that I think of it, I just...
Oh, dear. You're upset.
Yes. Yes, I'm upset. Let me tell you why. Louise Farnham, head of the finance committee, called me and said, "Darling, our books are absolute chaos. Could Henry be a doll and straighten them out?"
Well?
I said yes, without thinking. And then I said to myself, why?
Why shouldn't I, Norma? I'm an accountant.
You're not the only accountant in the congregation. Why don't they ever ask Seth Burton or Tom Mosley?
Well...
Whenever something has to be done, the automatic reflex action. Call on Henry Pollard.
I don't mind.
You've been extending yourself for 10 years. In the church, the school, the charities. And where did it get you?
Where is it supposed to get me?
Oh, nowhere definite, I suppose, but... I don't think you're getting any real satisfaction out of it.
That's not true, Norm. What's all this? Why are you so upset?
Because you're being taken for granted, and I think that rankles you. I think you're bored with your life.
Norma, darling.
No, you're 40. You're not really getting anywhere.
I've got a promotion coming up.
You haven't made a mark on the world, and you think being active in the community will somehow do something. But it hasn't.
Darling, I'm very content.
You don't use that word at 40. It's men like you who eventually break out, do something rash, desperate.
What can I do to convince you that I'm happy with the way things are?
Oh, I guess I'm being silly. I'm not even sure I understand what I'm saying. Oh, I hope that's not the office.
Darling, if they need me, they need me. Hello.
Hi, precious.
Who is this?
Oh, you're not alone.
Yes, Mr. McTavish, I remember you.
Can you get away?
Well, aren't you supposed to be in Los Angeles?
Oh, I missed you, sweetie, so I came home.
Well, if you need the figures, I...
Oh, the way you say figures really makes me feel sexy.
I'm sorry you missed me at the office.
Oh, Angel, I miss you everywhere. I can't get enough of you.
No, you people cannot do the annual report unless I check it out. Where are you staying?
Oh, baby, the champagne is cooling nicely.
I see. Well, look, this kind of thing really cannot be permitted.
Pour it on.
Suppose I weren't home this evening.
Honey, I'd be so lonely, I think I'd die.
Well, we'll have to make it short.
But sweet.
To save time, make sure everything's laid out and ready for me.
Oh. Do you have to go out this evening?
Oh, these are the West Coast people. They were supposed to be here at lunch. They claim their plane was late or something.
Oh.
They have their presentation tomorrow afternoon. Oh, well, what's the use in complaining?
Darling, suppose you'd refused.
That's not in my nature.
I'm worried about you.
Why? There's absolutely nothing to worry about.
Hello?
Norma, did I wake you?
No, dear. I've been waiting up.
Well, that's why I called. This thing is going to take longer than I thought.
Oh.
I can't tell you how confused everything is.
Will you be very late?
I'm afraid so. Don't wait up for me.
Of course I'm all right. You're letting these people take advantage of you.
Well, I don't mind.
Oh, Henry, sometimes I wish you would mind.
You'd better get to bed, dear. Good night.
Good night.
Lover.
Hey, how you doing?
I need $100.
I gave you $100 a half hour ago.
Oh, the bad man took it away from me. He kept making that little ball drop into black every time I said red. So I thought I'd fool him. I said black, and he made it drop red.
Well, our luck will change.
Can I have $100?
Well, I,
Something wrong? You have such a funny look. I mean, a serious funny look.
I don't have $100.
Oh, well, that's nothing. When we were in Vegas, you didn't have $1,000 that time either. But you just went ahead and asked Mr. Nightingale if everything was okay.
Mr. Nightingale?
Yes. You said they call him Mr. Nightingale because he sings such a sweet song.
Well, it's just that I'm in kind of deep.
Oh, precious. You mean you won't give me $100?
Sure, I will. Sure. You just wait here.
Come in. Well, Mr. Pollard, have a seat.
Thank you.
What can I do for you?
I would like to extend my line of credit.
Credits, credits, credits. The whole world's based on credit. Oh, well, let's check it out.
Well, what are we checking out?
Oh, we're completely up to date, Mr. Pollard. The dial on this telephone is hooked into a computer. In this little book, we have a roster of our customers' names, and besides each is his code number. And let's see, Pollard. Yeah. Oh, yes. 091. And so we dial 091. And in practically no time at all, the computer prints out on this typewriter everything we need to know. No sooner said than done. Oh, my. Oh, my goodness. I'm afraid we cannot extend you any more credit.
But you said... You said my credit was unlimited.
Yes, yes, we said that, and it's true. Your credit may be unlimited, but you... You're the one that's limited.
I don't understand.
Well, now, sir, you are an accountant, true?
Yes.
And so you, of all people, should certainly have an orderly sense of finance. You owe us a total of
$20,000.
$20,000? It adds up, doesn't it? 50 here, 100 there, 1,000 another time.
But I...
Yes, you don't remember, of course. This is the safe limit of your credit. And, of course, we must now discuss a means of payment.
$20,000? I don't have anywhere near that kind of money.
Mr. Pollard, I am not a moralist. I won't say to you, if you can't lose, don't play, or if you can't pay, don't borrow. That's all spilled milk, water under the bridge, a lock for the door of the empty barn.
But where can I possibly get $20,000?
You have $20,000. We've checked you out. That's how we set your limit.
But where?
You have a fine Persian rug on your floor in excellent condition. Bring at least $1,900.
Yes, but...
I'm showing you where this $20,000 exists. Now, you have an antique silver service set, which I have appraised at close to $1,100.
What are you saying? How do you...
We chose a propitious time to enter your home and consider the contents. And these, plus other valuable items, total $10,000.
But I can't sell...
For the other 10, you can take a second mortgage on your house. You see? The money does exist.
But all the furniture and valuables you're talking about belong to my wife.
Of course.
And the mortgage, the house, we own it jointly. I couldn't raise money without her consent.
And here you were saying you had no money.
But I can't ask my wife to...
Why not?
Well, because what could I tell her?
The truth.
How? How can I tell her the truth?
Sir, what kind of marriage do you have?
She'll divorce me.
In which case, you'll divide your property down the line, and your half will be enough to satisfy your debt.
How can I tell her I've been gambling and that I had another woman?
Now, you don't have to tell her about the other woman, just the gambling.
I can't tell her.
You will. You will. Just a matter of choosing the right time.
There's never a right time for...
Oh, yes, 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 there is. And you pick it. Would you rather go home and tell her now? Or would you rather tell her after we break your legs?
His name may be Mr. Nightingale, but the song he sings is more fitting for a vulture. Well, our friend Henry Pollard does not seem to have a pleasant set of alternatives. But there's no way to avoid the choice. And so, he will decide as soon as I return in just a few moments with Act Two.
Somehow you get the feeling it's not the tank they're testing.
Driver, move out!
Step on the throttle and 750 horsepower jumps to your hand. Ahead is a 60-degree gradient of mud and rocks. Although your stomach wants to bail out, you're ready. You're riding in an M60A2 tank, 54 tons of armored steel. Months of Army training as rugged as the Texas terrain you're rumbling through has put you here, smack in the middle of our proving grounds. When you make it, you'll be a proud, proven member of Armor.
Very good.
And you'll earn rewards as exciting as the job. When a storm's been brewing, whose weather bureau helps your weather bureau give you an early warning?
Who got all of the world's pilots and control towers to speak English so you can land safely no matter where you fly?
Who's just about wiped out smallpox so your kids may never need a vaccination? And who set the standards of purity on the imported food you eat?
Who helps you in dozens of ways you never dreamed of? The United Nations. Find out what the UN's been doing to help you.
Send for the free UN booklet. Write United Nations Association, Box 475, New York 10017. That's United Nations Association, Box 475, New York 10017. There's always been a U in the UN. A public service of this station and the Advertising Council.
When a man walks what is called a straight and narrow pathway all his life, the law of averages insists that he will have to fall off eventually. And the distance he falls is usually related to how firm was his step in the first place. Henry Pollard must have been treading very lightly because he has fallen all the way.
I can't do it. I can't tell Norma.
Then there may be another alternative. Steal it. Steal it from your company.
Steal it? I'm not a thief.
Oh, yes, you are. You're willing to steal the money from me. And don't say that's different.
I can't steal the money.
Why not? You're an accountant.
Oh, I don't handle money. I just keep track of figures.
Well, then you just have to go home and test your marriage.
Have you got my 100, sweetie?
Huh?
My 100 smackers. They'll call because I'll give you a kiss for each and every one of them.
No. Let's go home.
I don't want to go home. I want to play roulette.
I don't have any more money.
I know. That's why you went in to see Mr. Nightingale.
He won't give me any more.
Uh-oh. You're broke.
And in debt.
Oh.
Let's get out of here.
Where can we go?
Who cares?
I care.
What was all this you were telling me about being a free spirit, huh?
Well, your spirit can be free, but everything else costs money.
Well, let's just get in the car and drive, huh?
And live on what?
On my credit cards. It'll take them maybe a year to catch up with me, and then who cares?
It's been nice knowing you, Henry.
Julie.
Henry, a girl has to be sure of the rent.
But I can't go home. I can't. My name is Henry Randall Pollard, and I intend to take my life with this pistol. I commit this act because I don't have the ability to achieve success, nor do I have the humility to live with failure. Nor do I have the courage to pull the trigger. No, I'm not afraid to die. I just am not willing to shoot. Because if I make it a suicide, then Norma and the kids will not collect the insurance. What I better do is have an accident. An automobile accident. There's a guy up ahead.
Huh?
All alone. This hour of the night. He must have had a breakdown. No, I can't pass him by. I can do what I have to do later. Let me do a good deed before I leave this world. You in trouble?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thanks for stopping. I can't... I don't know. Something went wrong with the car.
Well, I can give you a lift to the nearest phone or garage.
Would you? Oh, that would be fine. My name is Barrington. Elmer A. Barrington.
I'm Henry Pollard.
Well, this is so kind of you, Mr. Pollard. So very kind. Could you drop me off at a motel? I'd like to spend the night there and worry about the car tomorrow.
Sure.
Sufficient unto the day. The trouble's there, too, as they say.
Hop in.
Just got a few things I want to take with me. This bag... and my attaché case. Yeah, that's about all. Now I'll just run up the windows and lock the doors.
Let me give you a hand.
Oh. Don't you touch that case.
What? I only wanted to help.
Put it down.
Well, sure. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I see it all now. This is the way it was supposed to be. Kubik arranged for my car to stall out on the turnpike. Then you happen along as if by coincidence and kill me and take the money. That's an old trick.
Will you please tell me what you're talking about?
Oh, yes. It's the last trick you'll ever try.
Hey, what are you going to do with that gun? You can't kill me.
Oh, but I can. And I kill very well.
Look, mister.
Because I have an instinct. A hunter's instinct. A killer's instinct. I smell, I sense death and murder.
Look, all I wanted to do was help you.
And before I kill you, I must tell you why your little scheme failed.
I had no scheme.
You were overmatched. You and my idiot servant, Kubik.
I don't know anybody named...
This is the last minute of your life. And you should know why your amateurish plan was doomed from the start.
Believe me.
I've lived here in America 30 years. Look at me. Listen to how I speak. I'm an American, a typical American, no? But my name isn't Barrington. It's von Barenheim. I killed 100,000, 200,000, who can count them? I pacified Warsaw for my Führer. The others, Goering, Himmler, Goebbels, Streicher, all dead, all gone, except me. Me, the one they call the werewolf of Warsaw. And now, you're dead, too.
It was a miracle. He pulled the trigger, but the gun misfired. I jumped him. He may have been a killer in his day, but that day was over. He was now an elderly man. He kept pulling the trigger, but I was able to push the gun against him. And when it finally went off, the bullet killed him, not me. Ironic. Why had I struggled? Why didn't I let him kill me? I had wanted to die. Or did I? And he had said something about money. I opened his attaché case. It was filled with bills. 20s, 50s, 100s, in neat bundles. I felt absolutely no remorse. It wasn't as if I'd killed a decent person. He was, after all, a Nazi war criminal. And why should I involve the police and try to explain? And why not just take the money, bury the attaché case a few miles down the road, and go home? Go home. Pay off Mr. Nightingale and never stray off the straight and narrow path again. Because, well, maybe this was the way Proust chose to reward me for being a good citizen who had only made one little mistake.
Will you be home for dinner again this evening, Henry?
Of course. I come home every night, don't I?
Well, yes, dear. This past month.
I had to slow down. Been working too hard. No more night sessions at the office.
I'm glad you don't drive around so much at night anymore. Say, you know that night you came home late?
Hmm?
I think it was the last time you stayed at the office. A man was murdered on the turnpike.
Yes. Yes, I think I remember.
Well, they caught the murderer.
They what? Who is he?
Henry. You look so pale. Well, I don't blame you. You passed that spot just before or just after it happened. It might have been you.
Who's the murderer?
Well, he's not the murderer yet, not until he's convicted. But the suspect is a man named James Kubik.
James Kubik?
Yes, he's been arrested and charged. And they don't do that unless they're pretty sure, do they?
James Kubik. Now what do I do?
Do I say that Mr. Kubik is innocent? Do I come forward and present myself as the killer of Mr. Elmer A. Barrington? I should. And if I were everything I claim to be, that people think I am, I would. But I'm not what I claim to be. If I were, I'd never have gotten into this thing in the first place. But how can I let an innocent man... Well, maybe a jury will acquit him. No point in my being hasty. Just wait and see what happens. Was there any mail today, dear?
Yes. I was going to call you at the office, but... Well, you received a summons for jury duty.
I'm on the panel.
Do you know who can get you out of it?
Well, why should I want to get out of
Louise
it?
Louise Farnham's husband, Howard. It's about time... Did you just ask why would you want to get out of it? You can get stuck with a murder case and be tied up for weeks, even months.
Well, but it's the duty of every citizen.
Certainly. Therefore, let somebody else do it.
No, dear. I'm afraid I'll have to accept my obligation.
Mr. Pollard, you are aware of the fact that you're under oath.
Yes.
My name is Victoria Ullman. I am the attorney for the people. Do you know me?
I do not.
Do you know the defendant, James Kubik?
No.
His attorney, Mr. Kenneth Hayes?
No.
His Honor, Judge Wilson?
No.
Did you know the deceased, Mr. Elmer Barrington?
No.
Do you know any of the jurors so far selected?
No.
Then you are not acquainted with any of the parties so far involved in this trial.
That's right.
And have you formed any opinions on the matter?
No.
You understand you will be sequestered for the duration of the trial, unable to go to your office by day or to your home at night?
Yes.
Your Honor, the people find Mr. Henry Pollard acceptable.
I knew the questions were a matter of form. All the time she was talking to me, she was looking at me, trying to determine, maybe to guess, if I could be fair, or if I could even be prejudiced in her behalf. I breathed a sigh of relief. I was halfway home. I wanted to be on this jury. I wanted to be on this jury more than anything else in the world. But Mr. Hayes, the defense lawyer, he scared me.
Mr. Pollard, the defendant's name, Kubik, does it suggest an ethnic origin to you?
Well, perhaps.
What kind of origin?
Oh, European.
What kind of European?
What kind? I'm not sure.
Would you suppose it to be Slavic?
Yes, I would suppose so.
Do you have any feelings one way or another about people with foreign-sounding names?
No. He looked at me very closely, very carefully. He was coming to a decision. I couldn't say a word. What I wanted to tell him was, pick me. Pick me. I'll see to it that your client goes free. I know he's innocent. Choose me. But of course, I couldn't say that. I couldn't say anything. I could only wait and hope. Hope that somehow he would read something in my voice that would make him say, yes. It seemed he regarded me for an hour. But it had to be much less than a minute. Finally, he said,
Your Honor, Henry Pollard is acceptable to the defense.
Acceptable to both the people and the defense. We have Henry Pollard, now a juror, sitting in judgment. We know what no one in that courtroom even remotely would dare to suspect. that juror number 6, Henry Pollard, is the killer, and not the defendant, the accused, James Kubik. How can justice possibly be served here? Well, you know that justice always triumphs. When I return with Act 3.
You've worked hard to get where you are, and now would be a very good time to give yourself a little pat on the back in the form of Buick Electra, a car filled with room, luxury, comfort, the perfect place for you and your free spirit to get together. Buick Electra. Think of it as recognition for a job well done.
Think it's bad, but they do it. They say I mustn't, but they do it.
Are they lying to us or to themselves?
Well, the next time you light a cigarette, answer the youngsters with the only truth they can believe. Put the cigarette out. Quitting is tough. Lung disease is tougher. Your Lung Association urges you to quit while you're still ahead.
Daddy, Mommy, it's a matter of life and death.
Here's a tip from your Better Business Bureau on the metric system. Have you noticed the metric measurements on packaged foods at your supermarket lately? Soon the metric system of measurement will be commonplace all around the country, and you should be ready for it. Look carefully at the metric measurements on the foods you buy. They may seem bewildering at first, but they make a lot more sense than the system of measurement we're currently using. For example, right now, fluid measures are expressed in gallons, quarts, and pints. Dry measures are expressed in bushels, pecks, dry quarts, and pints. And a dry quart is 16% larger in volume than a liquid quart. By using the metric system, however, you only need to know one unit of measurement for liquid volume, the liter. All other fluid measurements are multiples of the liter. And similarly, dry volumes are measured by the gram and multiples of the gram. This has been a tip from your Better Business Bureau on the metric system.
We have been observing the workings of fate on the life of one Henry Pollard. Henry Pollard is a typical citizen, outwardly. But inwardly, we are aware of other things. Henry has led two lives. One, a safe, sober, uneventful suburban existence. The other has seen him violate at least 5 of the 10 Commandments. Now, both lives come together in a courtroom, where Henry, who has committed murder, is not in the prisoner's chair where he belongs, but in the jury box.
And we will prove that the defendant, James Kubik, did, with all malice aforethought, plan and execute a scheme to murder his employer, Elmer A. Barrington.
As she started to talk, I looked at the defendant very carefully. For the first time. He was about my age, small. He had shifty eyes, which I suppose was not in his favor. He had a nervous manner, which didn't help either. But he had a right to be nervous. He was on trial for his life. I wanted to tell him, don't worry. I won't let you pay the bill for me. You're safe. I'll swing this jury for you.
Mrs. Bronson, you were Mr. Barrington's housekeeper?
That's absolutely correct.
You worked for him for how long?
15 years.
And what kind of a man was he to work for?
A saint.
What business was Mr. Barrington engaged in, Mrs. Bronson?
He bought and sold.
What?
Anything. Everything. Stocks, bonds, houses, business. He was a very sharp, shrewd man.
And was he accustomed to carrying cash with him in large amounts?
Oh, yes. Thousands of dollars in that attaché case of his. And when I'd say to him, Mr. Barrington, ain't that dangerous? He'd say, well, I got Kubik to protect me.
Some protection that one turned out.
The pistol he was carrying the night he was shot. The one that killed him, lying there on the table. Do you recognize it?
Yes, ma'am. Belongs to Mr. Kubik.
Will you tell us what happened the night of the murder?
Well, Mr. Barrington had just got a phone call. And he said, I have to go upstairs and get my attaché case. Get hold of Kubik and tell him he has to drive me.
Where's Kubik?
I'm right here, Mr. Barrington.
What's the matter with you? You look like hell. Been drinking again?
Oh, no, sir. I just feel sick.
Well, I can't let you drive me if you're sick. Is the convertible okay to take?
Yes, sir. I fixed the carburetor.
Come out with me and make sure.
Mr. Barrington, I'll need some money to pay some food bills tomorrow.
Well, wait a minute. I got some here in my case. Will a $100 bill cover it?
Yes, sir. He opened that briefcase and it was chock full of money. Well, I'd seen it before, so it didn't faze me none. But Kubik's eyes, they shone like floodlights.
And then Mr. Barrington and the defendant left the room. When did you see Mr. Kubik again?
Say half an hour later. I was in the kitchen. I thought you'd gone to bed.
Yeah, I can't sleep.
Where are you going?
You mean I got to check in and out to you?
I thought you were sick.
I got to go out and get some air.
You mean some booze?
I got to get rid of a headache.
Maybe if you went on the wagon.
This is a good little thing you got here. You keep telling the boss I'm a loss and...
How come you get all them hangovers?
I got headaches.
From booze?
No. From the boss. He can drive you crazy. One day, I am going to kill him.
I believe you would, too.
Now, shut up.
Where are you going?
I said I was going out.
Now, Mr. Kubik, you walked out to the garage with Mr. Barrington.
Yes, I did.
And you checked out the carburetor of the convertible?
Yeah, I did that.
And then you claim you gave him the pistol.
Yes.
Ordinarily, you would carry the pistol because you were also his bodyguard.
Well, yes, but I wasn't driving him that night.
No one saw you give this pistol to Mr. Barrington?
Well, nobody else was there.
So we only have your word for it.
Why would I lie?
Why, indeed? Were you aware of the fact that Mr. Barrington carried large sums of money on his person?
I didn't know what he carried. It was all in that case.
Mrs. Bronson has just testified that Mr. Barrington opened the attaché case in your presence and that it was filled with bills.
I did not see it. I mean, I mind my own business. Somebody opens a private briefcase, I don't snoop to see what's inside.
What have you to say to the testimony given by Mrs. Bronson that you threatened to kill Mr. Barrington?
I didn't threaten to kill Mr. Barrington.
Did you say, one day I'm gonna kill him? Well, did you?
No.
You didn't say it.
But I did not mean it. Why would I kill him?
Because he was strict. Because he may have insisted on a better job from you.
Everybody says something they don't mean sometimes. Don't you? Don't you ever get mad at somebody?
It was going from bad to worse. When you sit on a jury, you know how things are being taken by your panel mates. You can tell, well, by the way they breathe, the way they listen, the way they pay attention, or pretend to pay attention. You can tell everyone's already leaning one way or the other, and they were leaning toward conviction. Unfortunately, he was a terrible witness for himself.
Didn't Mr. Barrington threaten to fire you?
No. Yes.
And isn't it true that the real reason he kept you is because you were willing to work for low wages?
Well, I...
Why were you willing to be underpaid, Mr. Kubik?
Well, jobs are hard to get.
Especially for a man with a criminal record.
To compound the damage, Kubik had served time for assault. He had almost killed a man. There may have been some justification, but I could see he was gone. And yet, I couldn't let him pay the bill for me. Or could I? What could I do? Stop the trial and step forth and confess? No, I couldn't do that either. And then it occurred to me there was a way. He would be found guilty, but I could make him a hero. He would get off easily. All I had to do was somehow get word to his counsel.
Your Honor, I wish to recall the defendant to the stand. I do this because we've come into possession of a piece of evidence which casts an entirely new light on this case. Mr. Kubik, you came to this country from Poland?
Yeah.
While in Warsaw during the war, had you ever heard of a man named von Barenheim?
My memory ain't so good.
You were an officer in the Polish army, were you not?
Yeah, I think I was a lieutenant. I don't really remember.
When the Nazis overran Poland, special Gestapo execution squads hunted down most of the Polish officers.
I think that's what happened, but I don't remember. I was in prison. I find it hard to remember. I get headaches.
The leader of the execution squads was Colonel Fritz von Barenheim. He was known as the Werewolf of Warsaw. Do you remember him?
People think I get drunk all the time, but it's just that I have this headache.
He was a war criminal. Hundreds of thousands died because of his atrocities. Now, we have been able to determine that this von Barenheim escaped to America and changed his identity to Elmer A. Barrington.
I got the headache now.
But you, one night you recognized him. Something happened. He gave himself away. Filled with completely human, absolutely understandable desire for revenge, in a fit of emotion you simply could not control, you killed him.
No. I did not kill him.
You killed him to avenge your dead and tortured countrymen.
I never killed anyone.
The air was changing in that jury room. I could smell it. They were leaning forward and looking at him now. For the first time, they saw him as a human being. I glanced at the lady on my left. A tear was running down her cheek. But the idiot, he was too stupid to see his only chance was to confess. Confess, you fool. Confess, and you're a hero. His lawyer was working desperately to make him see it.
It doesn't lessen your guilt, but it makes it human. Thou shalt not kill, the book tells us. But how do we answer those who understand only death and murder? You're a hero. You've avenged a million crimes. Your name will go down in history as the Avenger of Warsaw.
I won't not kill anybody.
This stupid, cringing coward. He was being offered immortality, and he didn't have the courage to accept it. He would have a place in history. He would be somebody. But he sat there, just stammering, stuttering, until finally the idea seemed to percolate somehow into his brain.
You need not be ashamed, Mr. Kubik.
Oh, well, I...
Confess proudly. Accept the blame, but also the glory.
Yes. Yes. I recognize.
recognized him.
Confess? To what can he confess? I killed Barenheim. Me, I did it. It's my glory, not his. It's my immortality, not his. Why should he be known as the destroyer of the werewolf of Warsaw, the avenger of the innocent martyrs? I'm the one who killed Barenheim.
Tell us, Mr. Kubik, tell the court in your own words how you recognized this infamous monster.
Oh, that glory, that credit, it belongs to me. I won't give it away. I won't give up a place in history. I won't. It's mine.
Tell us, Mr. Kubik.
He can't tell you anything. Do you know why? He didn't do it. I'm the one.
What are you?
I killed Barenheim.
What are you saying?
Listen to me, everybody. I killed him. You see, I recognized him from an old picture in a magazine. I never forget a face. I killed him. You don't believe me? I'll show you where I hid the attaché case. That'll prove it. Prove that I, Henry Pollard, killed the werewolf of Warsaw. Let the whole world know that I killed him.
And the whole world did. Pollard became a hero. Of course, he went to jail because some of the suspicious-minded people on the jury, another jury, the one that was impaneled to try him, wanted to know what had happened to the money. But there are still those who see him as a man of the purest motives. My only motive is to return here in a few moments.
Dr. Margaret Mead presents alternatives for working mothers.
When I was a child, I was always very much interested in children. And as I was growing up, I hoped to have 6 children, and I planned their names. Now, for many years, I was unable to have children. Finally, I was successful in having one child, whom I enjoyed very much, who was born just at the beginning of World War II. What I did was to move in with another family, and we shared the tasks of supporting and looking after this very large household, which is, I feel, the great solution for women who want to have children and also want to follow some kind of career.
Families together can find new ways of childcare so mothers can fully realize their God-given potential. Consider this option when you make choices. This affirmation of family by the Mennonite churches.
A good name is a treasure, but a bad name can also hold a certain value. We live in an age of merchandising, and any product is saleable if you know how to package it. Right here, at this position on your dial, you can have 7 exciting and suspenseful packages each and every week. Our cast included Howard Da Silva, Catherine Byers, Joan Shea, Bob Dryden, and Guy Sorrell. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
You eat meat. Where does the meat come from?
Animals.
And the animals eat grass. Turn the grass into meat, but the animal is a costly, wasteful step. Is it not better to turn the grass into meat directly?
Yes, yes, I would suppose so. But we don't know how to do that,
that
yet.
That is because you are still a very primitive society.
Could I go back with you to yours?
Yes, because that is the only way you can escape.
What you're saying is, with money, you can build a force field or a thing or whatever that will transport...
Or transmit...
...us back to whatever it is you come from.
Yes.
Do you know how much money you'll need?
I have priced the values of the basic raw materials. I will need exactly $1 million.
This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
CBS 4 Seattle, this is KIXI. The weather outlook calls for extensive fog and low clouds through Thursday with chance of a few showers tomorrow night or Thursday. The highs in the mid-30s and lows in the lower 30s. And currently in downtown Seattle, 34 degrees. It's 33 at the airport. Barometer's holding steady. It reads 30.43. On the passes, Snoqualmie Pass, Highway Barren Dry with ice in places. Blewett Pass, Highway Barren Dry, with ice in places. And Stevens Pass, there's compact snow and ice in places on the highway. It's closed between Skykomish and the Summit East, and westbound will open to two-way traffic 24 hours a day, tomorrow at 7 o'clock in the morning. This is KIXI, Seattle. CBS News next, 11 o'clock.
CBS News. The Senate holds a rare secret session Wednesday to consider cutting off American funds to support anti-communist factions in Angola. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS radio network. The full Senate meeting comes one day after a foreign relations subcommittee voted to stop all military assistance to Angola. Senator Hubert Humphrey, chairman of the panel, discussed the matter Tuesday night in Chicago. A report from Lynn Walter, WBBM in Chicago.
Attempt to cut off any form of military aid to the different tribal factions in Angola while still allowing the executive branch a mechanism for going to Congress should the president decide that U.S. aid to Angola is needed. If our national security interests are involved, said Humphrey, the president can make a formal request to the Congress.
We just don't want any more of this business where they dip into funds and other departments through the Central Intelligence Agency with the Congress not knowing what's going on.
Saying it's important that Congress and the president share in these policies, Humphrey asserted that Angola will never become another Vietnam.
We're just not going to let that happen. I think that's what this vote was all about.
And there was the inevitable question here about Humphrey's presidential ambitions. As usual, he dodged them. When asked his reaction to the latest political polls, which put him as the Democratic frontrunner, a beaming Humphrey would remark only,
"Well, they're the most interesting polls I've seen for some time."
The Minnesota Democrat was here to receive the Man of the Year award from the State of Israel Bond Organization. Len Walter for CBS News, Chicago.
More news in a moment.
Are you an unpublished author? Do you have a book-length manuscript ready or almost ready for publication? Or do you know of anyone else who is an unpublished author? If so, Vantage Press invites you to write to a leading New York publisher for a free illustrated brochure titled To the Author in Search of a Publisher. It explains how you may have your manuscript printed and published in a matter of months. Just write to GPO Box 1414, New York, New York. Whether your subject is fiction, nonfiction, poetry, or even scientific, specialized, or controversial, this 52-page brochure shows you how to arrange for prompt publication. To get your copy, write to GPO Box 1414, New York, New York. That's GPO Box 1414, New York, New York. If this is your first book, you'll find this free brochure especially valuable and informative. Write to GPO Box 1414, New York, New York. GPO Box 1414, New York, New York.
Oil state senators managed to put off a vote Tuesday night in the upper chamber on the energy bill, which would force a temporary rollback of gasoline and heating oil prices. After the session was over, Senator Henry Jackson, a supporter of the bill, said this.
It looks like it'll be rather difficult to get sufficient support for it in time to act before Christmas. I'm hoping that the opponents will allow this to come to a vote, and we'll have a pretty good idea tomorrow.
Jackson said passage of the energy bill is needed to avoid skyrocketing fuel prices and a return to double-digit inflation. The House Tuesday night refused to allow a shortcut toward congressional approval of that bill to extend the tax cuts into next year. Backers of the tax measure failed by 22 votes to get the two-thirds majority necessary to act immediately on the bill. This is significant because a two-thirds majority would be needed to override a presidential veto. President Ford has threatened to veto the tax bill unless a federal spending ceiling is attached. Women inmates set several fires and rampaged on the grounds of the state prison for women in Frontera, California, Tuesday night. Authorities have regained control at this hour. Officials said about 200 of the 700 women housed in the prison were involved. They said the inmates were angry over the cancellation of a Christmas party. The price of mailing a letter may not go up this month. After all, it was scheduled to rise on December 28th from the present 10 cents to 13 cents. But in Washington Tuesday, federal judge John Sirica ruled that the Postal Service did not follow all the legal requirements in applying for the rate increase. He said they will have to go through the procedure before any rate increase can go into effect. A federal judge in San Francisco has accepted the guilty plea of Sarah Jane Moore, the woman accused of trying to assassinate President Ford. She will be sentenced on January 15th. CBS News continues in a moment.
If you enjoy wine with your meals, here's something you should know about wine before meals.
Before, that's the time to say I'll have a glass of Duvernay. Before a meal of a day or night, Duvernay is always right before, yeah, before. It's the time before for Duvernay.
Most wines go with your meals, but Duvernay goes before. Think of it as an appetizer, a wine that's right for your appetite. Before lunch, before dinner at cocktail time, before whatever you've got cooking. The distinctive taste of Dubonnet before makes what comes after that much better. Dubonnet. It all started in France, of course. Product of USA, Dubonnet Company, New York, New York.
The British government has announced a $325 million plan to save the financially troubled British subsidiary of the Chrysler Corporation. But this will mean some 8,000 Chrysler workers in Britain will lose their jobs. Government officials said it's the only way to keep Chrysler from pulling out of Britain. This is Doug Poling, CBS News.
CBS for Seattle, this is KIXI. The time now is 6 minutes past 11.